Good morning. It is Kale and Company live right here on WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Thanks for being with us on this Tuesday morning. It is going to be a beautiful day to get out and do some activities that you desire. Take advantage of this beautiful weather. Well, we are presented by Northeast Delta Dental. Northeast Delta Dental, with individual and family plans designed to fit your lifestyle. Learn more and find your plan at DeltaDentalCoversMe.com. It was a beautiful day in Boston yesterday, where I spent a number of hours. And it was a great day for baseball. Not such a great day for the Red Sox, however, as they came up on the short end of a 6-0 defeat to the Cleveland Guardians. And they've had a very, very difficult time in the early going this season catching the baseball. The Red Sox have. It seems like it should be a simple thing for a major league player who's paid millions and millions of dollars, but it hasn't been for the Red Sox this year. And it was another ugly game yesterday, and it really got ugly in the eighth inning when there was a fly ball into short left field. And if you've ever played any kind of baseball or softball or even wiffle ball over the years, or even watched the game over the years, you know it is much easier to come in to catch a pop-up or a fly ball than it is going back to catch one. So this one was a typical short fly ball to left field in the eighth inning. They had a gold glove left fielder out there for the Red Sox, Tyler O'Neill, who's really been the only bright spot of the Red Sox season this year so far. He was coming in on it. And for some unknown reason, Rafi Devers was going back on it and waving his arms up in the air. Maybe he was calling for it. I don't know. But it was Tyler O'Neill's ball, definitely, to catch. Well, there was a collision in left field. Tyler O'Neill went down. Rafi Devers went down. I think Sedón Rafaela went down for a short time because he was back there, too. This was an easy play for a left fielder, especially a gold glove left fielder like Tyler O'Neill, to catch. And Devers out there, Rafaela out there, and the collision took place, and Tyler O'Neill walks off the field with a towel, holding his forehead. It turns out he needed 8 stitches. He's out day to day. Things go from bad to worse for the Boston Red Sox. And like the Keystone Cops out there. I mean, really, you have your heart in your mouth anytime a ball is put in play by the opposition, knowing that something is bound to go wrong. It's just the way it's been. It's been a comedy of errors. It really has. I mean, the defense on this team. Pitching, you know, pitching hasn't been bad. Actually wasted a very good effort yesterday by Cutter Crawford into the sixth inning. He had a shutout. But that went by the boards as soon as they went to the bullpen. But the starting pitching hasn't been bad. That's been probably the best aspect of the Red Sox season thus far, starting pitching. That hasn't been bad. A bullpen has been less than mediocre, and the defense has been awful. Awful, awful, awful. Anyway. Now, the game tonight at Fenway, Red Sox and the Cleveland Guardians. Today, by the way, April 16th, it is Free Cone Day. Free Cone Day. So I would assume that some of the ice cream places around here, around the country, giving out free cones. Andrew Gibson, do you know of any place that is giving out free cones today?
Well, let's take a look-see here.
All right. With the ice cream in them. I just don't want the cone. I want the ice cream, too. Free cone day today, it says. And while Andrew's looking
at have Dairy Queen.
Yeah?
Dairy Queen's one of them.
What's the deal?
Free cone day at Dairy Queen, says here. Unfortunately for soft serve enthusiasts, let's see. Oh, okay, they're just talking about. So, yep.
They're giving out free cones?
Oh, that's actually an old article. Never mind. Hold on one second. Let me take a look here.
Okay, I will say it's National Eggs Benedict Day, and there are some great places right here in the city of Concord, city of Manchester, where you can get some great Eggs Benedict, if that's what you desire on Eggs Benedict Day. National Librarian and National Library Workers Day is today. It's National Orchid Day and National Wear Your Pajamas to Work Day. Neither Andrew nor I got that memo because we are not in pajamas, but we could have been because it is National Wear Your Pajamas to Work Day. It's also Teach Your Daughter to Volunteer Day. Well, not only did Kitty Ray and I attend the Red Sox game yesterday, we attempted to get a good viewing position for the Boston Marathon. And I say we attempted to. We made our best effort to get a good spot to watch the marathon. But you've got to stake one out very early. We went over, and of course, the elite runners had already come in. I mean, the elite runners were in before noontime yesterday. And a couple of great performances. The men's race was won by Cisse Lema of Ethiopia in the 10th fastest time ever in a Boston Marathon. And Helen Obiri of Kenya captured the women's crown. Any news on the cones?
So it looks like Ben and Jerry's.
Yeah?
Yeah, Ben and Jerry's.
So what's the deal? Do you have to buy one, get one free? Or?
It just says free cone day. It doesn't seem to specify.
Wow. So I know there's one.
My guess, one for customer is my wild speculation, but it doesn't actually specify.
Well, there's one of those in downtown Manchester.
Yep. Downtown Manchester where, free cone there. And I do see Dairy Queen as well.
Free cone?
Yeah, it looks like Dairy Queen might be celebrating here.
All right.
As far as local mom pop shops, I'm not sure, but maybe give them a call.
Or give us a call. Give us a call if you know anywhere that's giving away free cones today. 603-224-1450. 603-224-1450. This is free cone day. And I would imagine, although I guess it goes without saying, that the ice cream has to be in the cone. I mean, what good is a cone without ice cream in it, right?
You could do a waffle bowl. I remember getting those at Cold Stone way back.
Oh, yeah. The waffle bowls, the waffle cones are nice, too. What did I have? I had a waffle cone not too long ago. But at any rate, it is National Cone Day. And there you go. And one piece of Concord history. It was on this date, April 16th, 1965, some 59 years ago, that after a major organizing and fundraising effort by, among others, Dudley Orr, Russell Martin, Malcolm McLean, and figure skating police chief Walter Carlson, construction began on the ice hockey rink that we know as the Everett Arena on Loudoun Road. And it has withstood the test of time. Still a great facility, had some upgrades over the years, but pretty much the same structure that was built starting on this date, April 16th, 1965, meaning next year in 2025, the Everett Arena will be celebrating its 60th birthday. Now, we have a guest coming up in the second half of our show today. His name is Jonathan Fanning. Might sound familiar to some of our listeners in Franklin, because I was doing some communicating with Jonathan yesterday by email, and he said, "Are you really in Concord, New Hampshire?" I said, "Yeah, I really am." He said, well, I used to work in Franklin, went through Concord all the time. Great city. So we're going to ask him, because I didn't pursue what he did in Franklin. Maybe Jonathan Fanning has been to Brothers Donuts in Franklin. Who knows? But we'll ask him. We'll ask all the penetrating questions, as we normally do, right here on WKXL, nhtalkradio.com. We're going to pay tribute to one of the great baseball broadcasters of all time who called it quits yesterday. We'll do that after these words. Kale and Company continues right here, WKXL, nhtalkradio.com, presented by Northeast Delta Dental. Welcome back, Kale and Company Live, WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. A delight to have you along with us on this Tuesday morning. And it was brought to my attention first, actually, by my daughter, Melissa, whose husband, Cody, is a Yankee fan, believe it or not. The Yankees announced Monday that their legendary radio broadcaster, John Sterling, is retiring from his job immediately at the age of 85 years old due to health concerns. Hope he'll be okay, because he has entertained and informed many over the years as voice of the Yankees. Before that, he was on the Turner Channel, WTBS, remember that, when they had all the Braves games and Atlanta Hawks games? He's done it all in his broadcasting career. Radio voice of the Yankees for 36 years, including 5,420 regular season games and 211 more Yankee games in the postseason. Sterling was probably known best for his catchy home run calls, and here are a few of those.
3-1, swung on, hit in the air to right center and deep. Bradley going back. He's on the track, at the wall, and she is gone. That's a long way to the back end of the Boston bullpen, over to into the crowd. Gio Urshela, the most happy fella. Oh, he's the most happy fella. Gio Urshela homers, and the Yankees finally have a lead. It's 1-0 Yanks. It's lined at deep left field. That ball is high. It is far. It is gone. It is a two-run home run for Austin Roman, over the high wall and into the monster seats. Romy, my homie, he hits a two-run home run, and the Yankees take a 2-0 lead.
And that was a changeup from Sale, and Austin Romine really saw that from the hand. He was ready for it, which is why he was able to pull it.
There's a drive deep left center field. It is high. Not as far. That is gone to the back row of the monster seats. It's Gleyber Day. Gleyber Torres powered one into the last row of the monster seats in left center. And like a good Gleyber, Torres is there, and the Yankees promptly take a 2-0 lead. There goes the deep right field. That ball is high. It is far. It is gone. Oh. Second deck. Yes, indeedy. This is the dawning of the age of Gregorius. A homers to right, a second deck job, and the Yankees take a 3-2 lead. Well, 2-8, man, here is Judge. Here's the 2-2. Swung on and hit in the air to deep left. That ball is gone. Over the high scoreboard wall and into the seats in left field. A Judgeian blast. Aaron Judge homers to left to tie the game. All rise. Here comes the Judge.
And there you go. The legendary calls of John Sterling with his longtime radio partner, Susan Wallman, who was a Broadway actress at one time. Most of those home runs were hit against the Red Sox that we heard called there. Sterling called 5,060 consecutive games, 5,060 from September 1989 to July of 2019. He called every at bat of Derek Jeter's career and every pitch of Mariano Rivera's career. And that's true because he did the play-by-play for every inning of every game. Susan Waldman was there. She was more of the color analyst, if you will. But John Sterling called every pitch of Derek Jeter's career, Mariano Rivera's career, and so many others. It's very unusual, folks, if you don't know, for a baseball, especially radio broadcaster, to do every inning of every game. Usually they switch off with their broadcast partner, and one guy will do four or five innings, the other guy will do four or five innings, or six and three, whatever the split may be. But very unusual in Major League Baseball anyway, for a broadcaster to do the entire ball game. But that's what John Sterling did for 36 years as radio voice of the New York Yankees, and he will be honored at Yankee Stadium before Saturday's game against Tampa Bay. So there you go. The legendary career of John Sterling has come to an end. City of Manchester considering a proposal to sell unused city-owned properties to invest in more affordable housing. On Monday, the Committee of Lands and Buildings discussed a proposal from Manchester Mayor Jay Rueh that would put more than two dozen city-owned lots on the public market. Now, according to that proposal, half of the money received from those sales would go into the city's Affordable Housing Trust Fund. Rueh told WMUR, "So we're doing two things. We're increasing our housing stock by deeming this land surplus so that we can do more single families and multifamily residential living. But at the same time, half of that money that we are going to earn from those sales will be going into the Affordable Housing Trust Fund, underlying our commitment to bringing more housing into this community to address the homeless crisis that we have," end quote. Data released this week from New Hampshire Realtors show the median home price for a single-family home in New Hampshire reached $500,000 last month. $500,000. That's the median home price for a single-family home in the state of New Hampshire. Some experts said the housing costs have increased due to a shortage of affordable housing. Manchester Alderman at Large, Joe Kelly Lavasser, said, and I quote, "We'll be able to hopefully get builders that are going to come in and do some work that will make some of these apartments more affordable. The private market is doing really well. Now the city is going to start putting as many on as we possibly can. And the more inventory we have will obviously, hopefully, help bring the prices down." So there you go. City of Manchester, if you want to buy some land, put up some housing, apartments, affordable apartments, here's your opportunity, folks. I'm sure developers will be swooping in because that land is going to be very, very valuable. And that's an idea that was proposed, and we'll see if it comes to fruition and if it'll be a successful program administered by the city of Manchester. But why not try and sell off that land that is really not being used and, well, try to create more affordable housing for folks in the community. By the way, I wanted to mention that the New Hampshire Opera Idol competition is coming up in the not-too-distant future. In fact, it's going to be 1 week from this coming Sunday, April 28th, at 3 p.m. It's going to be at the Bank of New Hampshire stage, and that is The doors will open at 2:30, and the event itself will get underway at 3, and presented by WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com, Concord TV, the New Hampshire Writers Project as well. So it's going to be a great afternoon. If you are an opera aficionado, you will enjoy it. And you can book your tickets now at ccanh.com or call 603-225-1111. ccanh.com or call 603-225-1111. Again, that's Sunday, April the 28th. April 28th. At 3 p.m. at the Bank of New Hampshire stage. And it's the New Hampshire Opera Idol competition. The audience will be choosing the winners, just like, you know, American Idol. Except the audience will be live at the Bank of New Hampshire stage. We'll take a break and then be back with our guest. And he's going to be a good one, so I want you to pay attention. Jonathan Fanning, author of Creativity Unleashed, 5 Habits of World-Class Innovators. Stay tuned for more. Kale and Company Live, WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. We are presented by Northeast Delta Dental. Kale and Company Live here on WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com for a Tuesday. And we're very pleased to be welcoming Jonathan Fanning to our show this morning. Good morning, Jonathan.
So good to be with you, Ken. Good morning.
It is a pleasure to have you with us. John is author of several books. His latest, Creativity Unleashed, 5 Habits of World-Class Innovators. And Jonathan, we were corresponding a little bit yesterday before the program today, and he asked me if I was really in Concord, New Hampshire. Jonathan, I'm really in Concord, New Hampshire right now, sitting here even as we speak.
I love it. I love it. I haven't been there in a while, but I've drive through now and then, and next time I'll stop and say hello.
Now, you worked in Franklin for a while, you told me.
I did, yes. Yeah, early in my career, I was involved in turnarounds. So I'd work with, a lot of times it was manufacturing, and I'd help them turn around. So I spent about a year with a factory in Franklin, a manufacturing company in Franklin.
Very good. Yeah. Well, that is terrific. Nice to know you have New Hampshire ties. So,
oh, yeah.
What is the best way that that we can tap into and nurture our creativity?
Yeah, good question. So yeah, part of this quest to figure out what creative people do and how they operate in my life came from a friend of mine was playing baseball professionally in Italy. And he said to me, and I played college baseball and college basketball, and he said, Fanning, you got to get over here and help me coach. And I'm thinking, that sounds great, but that sounds pretty much impossible. You know, like the baseball season, and he was in Tuscany at the time. In the baseball season, 6 months. And he said, you really can't help if you don't come for a month or two. And I'm thinking, I can't do that. You know, and in the world of creativity, one of the most important first steps is having a question that's worth solving. You know, a problem that bothers you enough that you'll actually look for different answers. And my friend gave me this problem to solve, you know, of like, if you could come and help coach baseball in Tuscany, you know, and most of us, our first thought is it's impossible, and therefore we don't even look for an answer to the question.
Baseball in Tuscany, who knew?
yeah.
So true. That not necessarily where you'd think of baseball, but at any rate, baseball is played now virtually all over the world, so not too surprising. But you have coached world class athletes.
Oh yeah, sure. Yeah. I've had the chance to work with everybody you can imagine, from Fortune 100 companies to coaches that coach some of the best sports. For the book, we interviewed. we interviewed Michelle Akers, who was voted the best female soccer player of the 20th century. She and Mia Hamm won the World Cup in 91 and 99 and the Olympics in 96, I think it was. And I had the chance to interview her. And one of her statements was a perfect summary of the creative mindset. She said to me, and it's so true in all of life, she said, one of the challenges for all of us is this. It's 10 words. She said, don't get bored doing the things that lead to greatness. You know, and I separate that sentence into three little parts because it's don't get bored doesn't just mean don't be bored. It might mean change the way you approach it. You know, she said to be a world-class soccer player, you know, she might still have the record for professional soccer for goals per minute played on the world stage.
Wow.
But to stay there, she said, I got to work on the basics so much. And it's so easy for people to get bored with the basics, to get bored with the thing. So she said, I was constantly saying, well, what's a more fun way to work on this skill? You know, like she went and played with the Swedish men's professional team, the national team. And she's like, I went out of my way to make the practices so much fun so that I wouldn't be bored doing the things that lead to greatness.
Wow, that is terrific. And, you know, you've got to take care of the fundamentals. I mean, you kind of alluded to that. I wish the Red Sox were listening to this program today. So, Jonathan, what is the target audience for this book, Creativity Unleashed?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I get to work with a lot of big companies, but so often people will say, Jonathan, I love that it applies in my life, too. You know, I'm a dad. I have two teenage daughters. You know, maybe we should have a moment of silence, you know. But so many of life's most important lessons don't just apply in work. You know, I'll do work with a big company and I'll see them maybe for a year and do kind of how do we build a culture that allows and facilitates and fosters creativity. But I also do stuff with schools and with parenting groups. You know, and I love giving parents some simple questions. Like one of my favorite questions for a parent is how do I make this, whatever this is, you know, maybe it's my Saturday morning routine, but how do I make it a little more memorable and a little more meaningful? Mm-hmm. You know, how do I make the drives to, I mean, every parent out there probably has drives to and from something.
Yeah.
You know, you're taking your kids to school, to soccer practice, to dance, to, you name it.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
And how do I make it a little more memorable and a little more meaningful? You know, and so often little tiny questions foster, facilitate, or allow for creativity.
You know, many of us will never reach our creative potential. And probably most of us. What is holding us back from doing that?
Yeah, that's a powerful, powerful question. Good answer to that. I guess my wife takes me to see this art exhibit recently. And the artist, it was a classic case of the starving artist. You know, this artist had never sold anything. I think he sold one thing total in his entire career. And I'm thinking, like, I'm spending 2 hours in an exhibit to someone who never sold any art, you know? But he made a lot of art. He would paint something every day, roughly, every, I think, 36 hours throughout the course of about a decade. So he did 2,000 paintings in a 10-year chunk of time, right? And sold one. You know, and if that's your brother-in-law, every Thanksgiving, every Memorial Day, every, you know, the 4th of July barbecue, you're saying, like, are you still doing the art thing? You know, you might not even ask him. You might say, is he still doing the painting?
Yeah.
You know, but you add to that, this guy would ship his finished paintings in crates to his brother. And then, you know, he passed away, his brother passed away, and his brother, his sister-in-law inherits crates full of art that no one wanted. You know, she starts opening them, and she finds Sunflowers and Starry Night. And, you know, it's Vincent van Gogh is this painter.
Yeah.
You know, and your question of what holds us back, it's that story. You know, Vincent van Gogh, was he creative? I would go with yes.
Yeah, I would think so, yeah. Starry Night, yes.
Yeah. Was he successful? Probably not, according to most of the people who knew him in his lifetime. You know, and I think that's a big chunk of what holds us back. We have these creative thoughts, you could call them seeds, you know, and we don't even necessarily let them grow because we think, well, what if that might not work? You know, for example, my daughter, my oldest daughter, is a senior in high school, you know, and she's trying to figure out what to do. In 2 months, she's done with high school, right? And all of her friends are saying, well, I've applied here and here and here and here and here. And she's got this different question. Her take is, she says, I learn more when I'm doing, and I would much rather get paid while I'm learning than pay to learn.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yep. So she's saying, well, how can I get someone to pay me $50,000 or more a year to learn rather than borrow $50,000 or so a year to
sure.
learn?
Yeah,
you know, and a lot of her friends, and especially some of the aunts and uncles, are like, but, you know, and it's that, like, maybe you're a little too creative there. that's part of what holds us back. It's that fear of we're going to be doing something at least slightly different than a lot of the rest of the world.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, with the price of college these days escalating to, you know, incredible amounts of money per year, like some in the range of $100,000, you have to start getting creative, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure.
Now, our guest is Jonathan Fanning. He's author of the new book, Creativity Unleashed, 5 Habits of World-Class Innovators. Now, would you agree that most everybody leads in a different way, has a different approach to leadership?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah. I spent most of my life coaching leaders that want to change something for the better. You know, a lot of times it was a big company, and then I shifted to smaller family-owned businesses. And, at first I wanted it to be one paintbrush. Like, this is what a leader does, and this is how they operate. And it's exactly not that. You know, the best leaders tend to take the strengths that they're given and the not so you know, the challenges that they have, and they build on the strength. One of the best leaders I ever worked with, he was super quiet, and he wasn't a great speaker, but when you were talking to him, you knew you had his attention. You know, he would ask a question that was so worth asking. And he would let you, he basically was telling you, you have to answer this. Like, I'm not going to answer it for you. And it was one of those, I didn't see a lot of other leaders doing that, but this guy, everybody wanted to work with him. Because they said, this guy, like, he pulls out the best in all of us.
And he was a quiet leader. Yeah.
Absolutely.
There you go.
Sure.
Yeah. Jonathan, can you stay with us a few more minutes?
Sure. Yeah.
We have to take a quick break. Kale and Company Live, WKXL. NHTalkRadio.com, here in the city of Concord, that Jonathan Fanning has driven through many times. And we will take a break. Be right back. Kale and Company, WKXL, presented by Northeast Delta Dental. We'll be right back. Kale and Company Live here on WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Our guest, Jonathan Fanning, author of the book, Creativity Unleashed, 5 Habits of World-Class Innovators. And Jonathan, you mentioned in your book that you have been through some traumatic experiences in your life. How have you been able to bounce back from those?
Yeah, well, I had a car accident early in my career, and it was a warm day, cold night, black ice in Concord. You know that probably all too well. Car starts sliding on the highway, and two tractor trailers obliterated my car. Mm. You know, and one of them, I watched it coming towards my door before impact. We get so many wake up calls. You know, and one of the most amazing ways to kind of pull out of them is perspective that's not just your own. You know, I read a lot of biographies and autobiographies. I also love to meet people and ask them some of their story. And sometimes we can get caught up in our own little story, you know, and it's an important story, but we can filter it like, oh, no one else has gone through what I've gone through, you know, and that's not really true. You know, everybody's gone through stuff that you've not gone through. And it's sometimes I get off track and I start thinking, woe is me, you know, and really two things. One is perspective, usually from other people's stories. And the other one is one phrase that that helped actually Michael Phelps when he was going through a tough time. After he won so many Olympic gold medals, you know, world records, he was struggling with, like, what's the point of life? And Ray Lewis sends him a book, and the first sentence of the book is, "It's not about you." And Michael said, "I read that sentence over and over and over again." You know, and when I get out of myself and think like I'm here to help someone else, you know, I'm here to serve other people, changes everything, changes perspective, changes the, you know, the woe is me side of things.
Who inspired you?
So many people, honestly, so many people. You know, Concord, New Hampshire. I 2 years ago, on the anniversary of the space shuttle explosion, I took my kids to Cape Canaveral, to the Kennedy Space Center, on the anniversary, and they had this incredible celebration, you know, of the lives of the astronauts and the teacher, Krista McAuliffe from Concord.
Right.
People like that, you know, I mean, people like before her, John Denver was supposed to be on that shuttle, and he opted out. He said, "You know what? It should be a person that's not, like, you know, not famous already like me." And he writes a song about it. She was flying for me, you know, powerful. But people who dream and then go do something. You know, my daughter, my daughters and I have read a lot about Amelia Earhart, and partly because she just from when she was a little kid, you know, her father takes her to the World's Fair when she's 7 years old. And he did it. It was very expensive, but he thought this will really inspire my kids and help them to see the world bigger. And when she got back, she said, I had this fire, this like passion in me of like what was maybe possible, and it never went away. You know, so many people throughout history have inspired me.
Do you find that people become more or less creative as time goes by? As people get older, more or less creative?
There's a really a challenging study that was done a few years ago about that, and they found that 5-year-olds, 98% of 5-year-olds score off the charts in creativity. They're creative geniuses, essentially. 98% of 5-year-olds, same exact kids. They did this over the course of a decade. Same kids at 10, only 30% score creative genius. Same kids at 15, down to 12%. And then adults around the country, around the U.S., North America, actually, only 2% of us score as creative genius. So that study, what they said at the end of that study is we've only learned one thing. Non-creative behavior is learned, which is it's a disturbing statement, but at the same time, it's very empowering because it says, wait a second, if I can learn how to be less creative, maybe I can go backwards. Maybe I can go backwards. You know, and one of the things we found is that by intentionally picking better questions and spending time with those better questions, we start opening up, we start going backwards on that, you know, regressing back towards creativity, if you will. You know, when we start saying, like, what's a simple thing as a dad? What's a simple thing as a mom, as a parent? What's a simple thing you could weave into your calendar? It'd be so easy to weave into the calendar, but it has the potential to change the way your kids see the world and their role in it. You know, and you start playing with a question like that now and then, and it changes, it opens up all these possibilities. You start seeing things that you didn't see before. You know, when I was a 15-year-old kid, my father hands me a book by Larry Bird. I was a basketball nut.
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah.
The Celtics had just won a championship, and I'm like, oh, the Lakers and the Celtics are just amazing. You know, and you're not allowed to like both, but you couldn't help but respect both because they were just so good as teams. And he hands me this book by Larry Bird. I read the book. At the end of the book, Larry Bird, last like 2 pages, he tells a story of when he was in high school. He says, when I was in high school, my coach told me, Larry, look, you could be out there for 2 hours a day. Somebody's out there 2.5. Larry, you could dribble it a million times a day with your left hand, working on the left hand. Somebody's dribbling it 1,000,001. You shoot 500 free throws a day, Larry. Somebody's shooting 600. And he said, someday you're going to play that guy, Larry. How is it going to go? You know, and I reread, it was two little tiny paragraphs at the end of the book. I reread those two paragraphs, and I closed the book, went out on the driveway and worked on my game, and my work ethic in basketball was never the same, you know. And from a creativity perspective, creativity, especially in leadership, whether you're leading you or a world, my father used a resource to teach me something. You know, he didn't say, Jonathan, you got to read 15 minutes every single day. He handed me a book that he knew I would read.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah. He didn't have to tell me to read it. I plowed through it and I devoured it. you know, and then it taught me a lesson, you know, and that question of like, how can I use a resource to better teach or motivate or inspire? Phil Jackson coaches Jordan for 6 championships, Kobe Bryant for 5. Phil would give his players 12 different books every Christmas with the same sort of intent. How can I use a resource to inspire, encourage, create accountability? And it wasn't the same book. It wasn't here, Michael, here, Scotty, here, you know, Tony right. Kukoc, here, Shaq, here, Dennis Rodman. What book do you give to Dennis, right? But he would pick the book that he thought would speak to that person where they were and give them something that they needed. You know, and it was a simple question of how do I get more creativity? And chase a question of what resource could help do some of what I'm trying to do? You know, how can I leverage an article or a video or a song or a quote, you know, rather than me having to do all the work in terms of, you know, inspiring or challenging or encouraging or teaching or mentoring?
Well, you must have been a basketball nut. I haven't heard Kukoc's name mentioned in years. But you're still a basketball nut?
You know, it's, I don't know if you're allowed to do this, but I watch a lot of the playoffs. I like watching how teams, especially really good players and good teams and good coaches, respond to the opponents. You know, so I don't watch a ton during the regular season, but I'll watch some of the big games, partly because they seem not to really bring it during the season.
Very true.
But in the playoffs, I love to see how they step up. You know, and I'll do the same thing with some of the soccer World Cup stuff, baseball. Yeah. You know, I don't watch a lot of the regular season, but as it gets towards the end, I might start really getting in there. And I used to. I used to watch a lot more, but no, not as much anymore. But yeah, definitely in the playoffs. I love seeing how they, you know, how is that? How are they going to change their defense to figure that out?
And ironically, the playoffs begin tonight.
Yes, they do.
The postseason begins tonight in the NBA. This book, I have not had the opportunity, to be quite honest with you, to read the book, only the information I've been able to derive. But one thing you mentioned to me, entrepreneurial adventures for teens. Can you talk about that briefly?
Oh, yeah, sure. So it's just over a decade ago. I've started maybe half a dozen businesses in my life. And I think 2 of them were just really donations. they were wow. You can spend $40,000 really quick and start over. But about 10 years ago, I started thinking, I wish as a teenager I had a chance to learn what it's like to start and run and own a business. You know, so I looked around and I couldn't find a camp that did that. So I said, I'll try to run one. You know, and I didn't really have the answer of how to run it. I just knew I wanted it to be 100% experiences. Like, I didn't want it in a classroom. I didn't want it to be, here's marketing 101. I wanted it to be, we're going to do things where you're going to learn something, or you're going to really wish you learned something, you know. And I started polling tons and tons of entrepreneurs all over the country, actually all over the world, and asking them, like, tell me about some of your most powerful lessons and how did they come about, you know. And if you were trying to sneak that or squeeze that into a half an hour or an hour or a couple days or a week, how do you do it? You know, and one of the first things we did is we had this competition where we'd have these kids in this camp and we'd say, you have an hour to make enough money to buy yourself lunch today. And the kids would just look at us like, what do you mean? And we wouldn't give them a lot of framework. It would just be, you have an hour. Oh, sorry, now you have 54 minutes. You know, and yeah. we'd put them in little teams, but they were allowed to change teams if they wanted. They could go on their own, you know, and every single time we did that, we did versions of it.
Yeah.
And every single time, these kids at some point, maybe a half an hour into it, would say, like, all we need is $7 a person. Okay, 7, there's 5 of us on the team, so we need to make $35 in the next 30 minutes. Okay. What can we sell and who can we sell it to? It can't be like a brand. We can't be building a website.
Right.
You know, and every single time, all of the teams would make enough to buy themselves lunch.
Wow. That is, you know,
something. And then we do this debrief, and that was part of the point to the camp. I wanted these kids to have experiences that just changed their perspective on how the world works, on what's possible. You know, and we'd do this debrief, and every time they would say, it was easier than we thought to make $30 or $40 or $50 in an hour.
Unfortunately, Jonathan, we are going to have to wrap it up. I'm sorry about that, but yeah. You're a terrific guest. Jonathan Fanning, the book, author of Creativity Unleashed.